This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, good afternoon, my friend. It's a warm one today.
Yeah, a stinking hot day in the Umpqua Valley.
97 is what we have here.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect weather for plants and me. Yeah, right.
They all need, no, not all of them need water.
I know. Some cactus don't care.
Yeah, they love this weather.
I know. Well, thank you for listening, and I hope you're inside and not shoveling dirt or rocks outside in your yard right now.
Oh, Lord.
Because you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But this is a show of gardening hints and suggestions and hopefully good information for you folks that are listening. And if you want to call in with a question, 673-4464, we'll get you right in here and ask your question, and hopefully I can give you an answer. And sometimes I don't know, but that's very seldom. Yeah, because I'll just make something up, you know.
Even if it's fake.
You yeah, know. I just guess, you know, what the heck. I've only done this for 50 years almost, so. Anyway.
Is it that? Wow.
Yeah. I started in 1973.
Well, that's right. You and I started about the same time in our careers.
Yeah. So, 2020, I was going to say 17, never mind.
1792?
1792. I sailed the ocean blue. But anyway, seriously, 673-4464. Now, this is the time of summer. Yeah, right. Where I get a lot of questions and phone calls about, why is my lawn looking so bad with all the brown spots? Well, you know, the heat is the main criteria. And the other part is, you know, how do you take care of your lawn? You know, what do you do? Do you anticipate if the weather guy says, yeah, next week is going to be in the 90s. Do you do anything special to kind of bump it up and get it ready for the 90s? But, you know, and so when I'm answering their questions, whether it's on the phone or, you know, I go into their house and give them a consultation or I'm giving them a bid or something like that, the first first questions I ask is, you know, what is your watering and fertilizing schedule? And sometimes, well, a lot of time, people just look at me and go, watering and fertilizing. Yeah,
what's
well,
that?
Yeah. And so I know right away they think it's a trick question, but it isn't. I'm trying to help them, actually. But in other words, how often do you water? And how often do you fertilize? And how long is the watering time? And what time of day do you water? See, those are all pertinent questions mm-hmm. to success in grass here in Douglas County in August, July, August, and even into September. It's still a little warm on some of the days. Mm-hmm. You know, but most of the year from, say, mid-October to about mid-June, you know, it's pretty easy to take care of a lawn. And they don't really take a hit on the weather until we get into good old July and August and September, for crying out loud. You know, if I were in charge, I would not let the temperature get above 75, so there. But I finally ask another question. Have you thatched or aerated your lawn, say, in the last 5 years? And a lot of them just kind of look at me like, what's that?
Yeah.
So I explain, you know, about the thatching and what it does, what the aerating does. I walk them around on their lawn and I see how spongy this feels. That's because there's so much dead grass built up under the what you're walking on.
It's not because a trampoline is underneath of it.
Right. And that water can't get down, the fertilizer yeah. can't get down into the roots. You got to clean that puppy up. And So all these questions always have a direct bearing on your lawn's health and your growth. That's all there is to it. And one more question I always throw in is, how short do you cut your lawn? How short do you cut your grass? I mean, you know, some people go once every 2 weeks because I don't want to mow every week. Okay, well, that's a reasonable answer. Mm-hmm. I mow mine once a month, but it's not irrigated and it's brown from 4th of July to the 4th of October.
Ah.
And, but it's neat and clean, and it's short. But not as short as some of us.
Kind of like a butch haircut.
Yeah, kind of like that. But the answers I usually get will help me diagnose the problem fairly quickly because, you know, most folks will, you know, give you an honest answer because we're standing in the middle of their yard and it's brown and you're going, you want to fix this or not?
Yeah.
Oh, golly. But I tell them that watering, most lawns are not getting adequate water when... you water like 10 or 15 minutes every day, it just doesn't get down into the grass roots. And I know I've spoken about this a lot, but the more I see of it and the more questions I get of it, I think maybe people need to hear it again a few times just to, you know.
Make it sink in.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Like water, let it sink in, you know, that kind of thing.
You got a Mike Pence fly there.
I know. He's, as long as he doesn't fly up my nose, I'm okay. So anyway, you got to get that water and that fertilizer down into the grass roots where it's needed. That's what's going to turn your lawn green. Even if it's 95 degrees every day, as long as the lawn can breathe, as long as the water can get down and you water it long enough and you feed it on a fairly regular basis, it's going to be good. There might be a few brown spots, but that could be a caused for... you know, a bug or a grub or something like that. But watering in the heat of the day is a waste of time, a waste of water, and expensive because of evaporation. You know, and I've said this a lot of times, I see some of the commercial establishments with the small lawns out front. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the water's going full blast and it's hitting the sidewalk, hitting the curb, and it's hitting the grass. Well, half.
How about 10 in the morning? Is that too?
It depends on the temperature. 10 in the morning would not be bad.
Like this morning?
Depends. You know, if it's 90 degrees, no. But if it's 70, okay.
Yeah,
you know,
I saw that
kind of thing.
When I was coming into work on Kalapuya there in Sutherland, some business had their.
Sure. Sure.
Irrigation on and water in their grass.
Yeah, morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, if it's not hot, go for it. It's not the best time. You know, the best time is prior to sunup, you know, like 5 in the morning or even 6 in the morning, because that way there's little or no evaporation at that point. So whatever water you're putting out actually gets into the lawn and maybe down into the roots if it's not full of thatch.
I just thought of that when I'm going to ask Mike.
Yeah, okay. Well, you should have that as in a written form, okay? But like I said, you know, watering, and I've spoken to people about this. Well, how long do you water? Oh, I water 10 minutes every morning. Okay, well, that's good, but all you're doing is wetting the grass. It's nothing's getting down past the root crown and into the soil where the roots actually are, and that's who needs the water the most to manufacture food, et cetera, et cetera, for the grass plant. And they finally get it and do that, and voila, there's an improvement within, you know, weeks, maybe a month at the most if they're real good at it. But 10 minutes, 15 minutes is not good. You know, half an hour, you're getting better. 45 minutes once a week, twice a week, maybe that's probably your best bet.
We're going to call the exterminator in here.
Yeah. You know, why don't we have an exterminator show to kill this fly?
Hey, Kyle.
Oh, gosh. But remember, watering in the heat of the day is just a waste of water and a waste of your money, because your water bill is not going down. I'm sure it's gone up. But like I say, water early and in early morning or in the late evening after the sun starts to do their sunset and there's just a few rays and the sky is pretty, crank on the water and water for a half an hour to 45 minutes, and that does more good, and you don't have to do that every day. You can do that every 3 or 4 days, and you could maintain a good lawn, provided that you are fertilizing on a regular basis, because it needs to have food to stay green. So morning, early, late evening, that's good. And then you don't have to water any more than like 2 or 3 days per week. That's the simple part. As far as fertilizing is concerned, you know, that happens from like March to October, but not in the middle of July and August, okay? As, you know, feed your lawn at least three times with, like, a high-quality, expensive lawn food, and it's going to respond, especially if it's thatched and there's not a thatch buildup, et cetera. And like I said, thatch is just old dead grass that your mower didn't pick up, so it sinks into the root system. And after X amount of years, that thatch acts as a water deterrent. Ooh, a call, yes.
We do have a call. Good afternoon. You're on the air here with Mike Winters.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Mike, a couple of questions about sunflowers.
Yeah.
I bought a couple from a lady, and I like them because the deer don't bother them. But she said they're annual sunflowers, and I've been reading about them, and I guess there's also a perennial sunflower you can get.
Yeah, there are. I think our Oregon winter may not sustain their comeback, but you know, that I could be wrong because there's many varieties of it. And like to the south of us, where they don't get snow and ice and things like that, they're there all the time. They're a permanent plant.
Well, all the big ones I see around Roseburg, then those are all annual.
Yeah, they are. I grew some at the nursery one year. I had about 20 of them, and which was way too many, I'll tell you that. As soon as I picked the seeds off and got the flower, as soon as it got cold, they died to the ground, and they did not come back at all.
I see. Okay, now when the flower dies and droops, do I cut that head off right away?
Yeah, you know, just what you can do a spot check, if you will. Try to pluck out a couple of seeds with a knife or something like that and crack them open and see how developed they are. If they look immature and small, and you know, pop one in your mouth, see if it tastes right. But if it's mature and small and not quite ready, leave it alone. And within, you know, another week, do another spot check. And when you feel that they're right, that's when you go ahead and pluck the flower off and just kind of set it aside till you're ready to harvest.
I see. Then you can utilize those seeds and plant them over the winter?
Yes, you can.
In a pot?
Yes, you could. Yes, you could.
Oh, okay. Is that how they do it in a nursery then?
Pardon me?
Is that how they do it in a nursery to grow new plants?
Yeah, in a protected place. You're not going to do it in the wintertime, but, you know, wait till spring comes along, and then when the frost or any really cold weather comes along, and it's passed, go ahead and plant. And if you... it would be good to protect them for a while until they actually germinated and came up. And then as the temperature begins to be a little bit warmer with no signs of frost, then you can put them outside.
Okay. How many seeds per pot should I plant then?
Oh, gosh. You might try three or four, something like that. And if four come up, then you can thin them out and leave the best one. Or just when you're transplanting them, you are going to transplant these in the ground, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay. So if you get four of them come up, you plant four seeds and all four germinate, go ahead and plant them in the ground, see what happens. But, you know, they're so prolific. I mean, you could throw them on the pavement, I think, and they would grow. I mean, that's how tough they are.
Really, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, then.
Well, you're sure welcome. Thank you for the call, sir.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good time for a break. What do you say?
Yes.
All right. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, we are back. Still 97 degrees.
Oh, good.
I can't believe the low tonight of 70.
Yeah.
Oh, Mamma Mia, it's not going to be a good night to sleep with no air.
Well, breathe in, breathe out.
Breathe in, breathe out. Take a step at a time, they say.
A step at a time, you betcha. Anyway, I'm talking about brown lawns and things like that and how to get rid of the browns. And as I spoke in the last segment, the thatch that goes down in there after you mow, I mean, you got a bagger and it's sucking up the, you know, 90% of the grass, say, or 85% of the grass, but there's always a small percentage that it doesn't get it. Mm-hmm. So it kind of wiggles itself down into the turf. And, you know, for a couple of years, nothing happens. And then about year three or four or five, you say, well, I've got these brown spots. And then you walk on the grass, and it's kind of spongy, and it feels kind of soft. In other words, there's maybe an inch of old dead grass down there.
Yuck.
making you feel that. And that's why the water doesn't get down. That's why the fertilizer doesn't get down. So you have to thatch it. And thatching just means raking the dead grass out, and so that the good green grass can grow and get the water and the nutrition. And you can do it with a rake, which is very laborious, or you can rent a thatching machine to comb out the dead stuff. And then you aerate, which the lawn with an aerator, which all that does, it's a big machine that just pulls plugs of soil out of the ground. And now when you water and fertilize, you can get down to the grassroots with all that good water and food. And the results are, bingo, a new green lawn. How did that happen? and also when mowing, don't cut the lawn too short. I don't know how many times I say that, but I keep seeing it. By cutting too short, the hot sun burns the grass and it browns up. It helps the brown up part. And it also promotes weed growth because the grass is not vibrant and it's not growing well. So the weeds take advantage of that. And bingo, there you are. So in the summer, set your mowing height high. Maybe not at the highest setting, but maybe the second highest setting. And it's okay that the grass is not, you know, looking like a golf green or something like that. But what helps, it'll help to keep it green. Because it's longer and it acts as an insulator against the hot sun, and it also retains moisture because it is longer. And when you cut it really short, you know, like that scalp job, it dries out the soil very quickly. So whatever moisture was in there is dissipated and evaporated and not usable.
Gone with the wind.
Yeah. So, and remember this, a green lawn acts like an air conditioner and it'll cool your yard. And if your yard is cool, your house will be a little bit cooler, maybe 1 or 2 degrees. But hey.
Oh, mama, that makes a difference.
It does. 1 or 2 degrees, it's okay. And then when the sun goes down and there's a little bit of breeze, you open the windows and it's even cooler. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do at our place. We get a breeze every night about right after the sun goes behind the ridge. And but your lawn is more healthy. It looks better all the time, and you regularly fertilize it, and that's all. It's just a good green lawn takes a little bit of work, but it's, remember this, it's an asset to your property should you want to sell it or buy something else somewhere, and your for sale sign's out there and a potential buyer comes up and sees this nice green plush lawn. That does something to their mind and go, wow, if the lawn is that good, the rest of the place must be good because they take care of it.
Right.
And that's a lot of work. And any real estate agent out there will back me up on that. I've given talks to the real estate, I don't know what they're called here. They're not a club, but they're it's a membership thing where all the real estate folks meet once in a while.
MLS? I don't know.
Maybe that's it. I'm not sure. It was years ago. And, you know, they picked up on that really, really well. Now, one last thought about this. If you have a sprinkler system, make sure it's doing the job. In other words, check it frequently and make sure all the sprinkler heads are operating correctly. Turn it on, stand there, and look. Watch. And if one, you know, why isn't that one working? Well, maybe it's just plugged up with something and it's an easy fix. Just unscrew the top, flush it out, bingo, it works. or maybe it's broken, so you have to replace it. And then maybe that's where the brownest spot in the yard is because the sprinkler's broken.
It ain't getting none.
Yeah, and just, you know, you don't have to check it every week, but, you know, maybe once a month, turn it on and just look at it and see, oh, yeah, it's operating. It's covering everything. It's getting the edges. It's, yeah. You know, and try not to do it on a windy day because that won't give you a clear picture of how the thing is actually working. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
That's why you said it.
That's why I said it. That's because I know it works. Yeah. So just make sure it's reaching every part of the lawn. So what? no broken heads, no clogged heads, and you just make adjustments as needed and keep that lawn green. That's as simple as it gets. Now, one thing, too, landscaping is a never-ending process. Mm. If you want a good landscape and you've got your yard and you like to work in the yard, that's a real plus. There's some folks that don't necessarily like to work in their yard, or maybe they're handicapped in some physical way or something like that, and they're older and they can't run the mower or do the hoeing. And
can't do the standing like they used to or whatever.
Right. I can relate to that, trust me.
Oh, me too.
But it's a never-ending process.
Yeah.
And there's always something to do in your yard, even in the middle of winter, which could be pruning or something like that. But I try to keep my place as low maintenance as possible, but my wife keeps planting flowers, and we got to keep watering them and fertilizing them and things like that. But she does most of that, thankfully. And, you know, of course, we've got our vegetable garden that in this heat we're watering about every other night. And we're getting, she brought a zucchini in yesterday, I think yesterday, 2 feet long and about 6 inches in diameter. So what are we going to do with that? Make it a mobile home or what? You know?
Yeah.
And she says, that's not the biggest one either.
So, oh, geez.
Yeah. Yeah, but landscaping and yard work is an ongoing proposition. And of course, there are always, every year, there are new varieties of plants that are put on the market. And you go, whoa, what's that? What's that do? So, and every month, I get several industry magazines about landscaping, about nurseries and things like that. And they've got a section of them, not every month, but right now they've got a section of them with the hot new plants coming on the market.
All right.
Oh, good.
Mommy.
Yeah. And and there are color photos and descriptions, and they look really good. And the only problem I have with this is they aren't available to our industry right now. They're pictures of stuff that's coming on the market, and maybe you could buy some small ones in 4-inch pots from some nursery clear in Portland or Seattle or something like that.
A lot of good that does.
Yeah, it doesn't do a lot of good. Quit enticing me with all these beautiful plants.
With these prototypes.
Yeah, the photos. And, you know, and sometimes you just won't have access to these beautiful things, and so I don't talk about them much. But I enjoy looking at them, and, you know, they're, like I say, they're not available. Some of them are not even available for 2 or 3 years.
Oh, really?
Because they have to get their numbers up. You know, with that door open?
Yeah.
They have to get their numbers up before they can sell. So if you got 100 plants and some guy like me comes in and buys all 100 of them, you're out of luck. Yeah. But, you know, back when they propagate, and in a year or two, they've got several thousand, and then they can start to market them. And then we slowly get those kinds of things, you know, clear down here in Rosenberg, you know. But it's okay. There's a, for instance, I was looking at this one today. It's a new dwarf grass, and it's called Lemon Zest Japanese Forest Grass. And I go, geez Louise, that's a long
name for a short grass.
Yeah, it is. And this is a short grass. And the photo was beautiful. And it has like a tricolor vegetative leaf. And the leaves are kind of about an inch wide and maybe 10 inches long, something like that. And it's small. It stays low to the ground. But it's absolutely beautiful. Huh. And it has a tricolor. The vegetation and the leaves are three colors in the same leaf. They got chartreuse,
nice.
Chartreuse, lemon, and cream colors. You know, and the photo, Oh, we got a call? Okay.
We do.
Okay, I'll shut up.
Hey there, you're on the air with Mike Winters. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
This is your, hello. How are you today, Mike?
Oh,
you love this warm weather, don't you?
It's gorgeous. I just love it, yeah.
Me too. Anyway, okay, I'm the same one that called last week to see if you could find a crepe myrtle that's burgundy.
I have had not any success on that yet, but there's a few other places I can still check. So keep calling and bugging me until I get you one, okay?
All right, I trust me, I will.
Okay. You don't have a name for
that
particular one, do you?
No, you know, like I said, I have three crepe myrtles of my own, but they got the only ones I've ever seen were the greener ones.
Huh.
And then this neighbor next to me, I don't talk to him because he's strange, okay?
Mm. Well.
And so I can't ask him, so I asked my other neighbor to go over and ask him what it is.
Wait, maybe you could take a couple of cuttings at midnight and then start them in little pots and see.
It's time for a break.
Okay.
On News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, we're back, Mike. 90-some degrees. I won't say what. But.
Oh, it's probably 99 or something right now.
Oh, yep, you're right.
Am I right?
You're correct.
Oh, gosh, I didn't want to hear that. I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, I was hoping it wouldn't get up to 100 like Kyle said it was going to.
I hope Kyle's wrong. But I was talking about the lemon zest Japanese forest grass before
yes.
we left in the last segment. And talking about the color, it has like three colors. The leaves are chartreuse, lemon, and cream. And I saw a picture of it, and I'm not sure what chartreuse color is. I tried to envision it.
Yeah.
It was a very pretty leaf, very pretty small plant.
Is that like a purple or something?
That's what I was thinking, but I didn't see that on the photo.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look at it again. But anyway, there's lots of color, and this is a type of grass that, you know, most grasses will grow in full sun and do well and the heat doesn't bother them. But this particular one does not like the full sun, which is really kind of strange for grasses, but it likes a lower light. In other words, not full deep shade. It'd probably survive, but it would maybe not have the growth that you would expect out of it. But say morning sun, afternoon shade, or filtered shade, that kind of thing, it will do very, very well. And it grows about 12 to 14 inches tall, so it's and about 18 to 24 inches wide, and it does well here in Oregon. It fits our climate scheme. It fits our temperature range very well. I think it'll go down to zone 5, which is which can be pretty cold. And then there's one from Australia called Golden Feathers Jacob's Ladder. And I thought, what kind of name? Who makes up these names anyway? But it's another small shade plant, and the foliage is variegated with gold and green leaves, and the gold and green are on the same leaf. In other words, at the end of the stem where the leaf begins, it's green, and then it kind of stops halfway in the leaf, and then the rest of the leaf is gold. I mean, it's very, very attractive in that. So it's very, very good for a rock garden or flanking a water feature or a small planter bed. And it grows to about 6-8 inches tall, again, 12 to 14 inches wide. And it will grow also in our plant zone, which is like zone 5 to 9. And we are zone 7. I made a mistake in the last segment. I said zone 5. But we're zone 7, which is, it can take frost, it can take cold, and all that kind of stuff. And in early spring, one of the first blooming shrubs that we see is a forsythia. A great plant for a screen, a hedge, or a standalone shrub. Well, that forsythia, you'll notice it really quickly because, like I say, early spring, and all of a sudden you'll see these big shrubs with yellow flowers, bright canary yellow flowers all over them, and you go, wow, spring must be here. It's about the only thing that's blooming at that time, I think, you know. But it's a great plant. Well, they got a new one. And it only grows half as much because the forsythia, if you don't prune it, it'll grow 10 feet tall and 10 feet wide if you don't prune it. I mean, over a long period of time. But they've got this new one, and it's called Spring Fling. It only gets about 4 to 5 feet tall, which is more manageable in your yard. And it loves the full sun, and it's not picky about poor soil. That's how tough these guys are. Poor soil could be, you know, heavy clay or rocks or whatever. But they have hot yellow flowers in the early spring. And the research I was doing said it's deer resistant. I don't know if they mean in Los Angeles or Roseburg, but the verbiage said it's deer resistant. And, you know, like, okay.
Sure it is.
I'll try a couple and find
yeah.
out. And it, like I say, it doesn't get as large as our local forsythia. 5 feet, you know, maybe 6, that tall, that wide. And it's a great plant for cut flowers because the flowers go along the stem. And let's say the stem is 3 feet long. Well, 2 feet of that will be full of these bright yellow flowers. And you can cut the whole stem. Because the flowers are close to the stem, they don't have their individual stems, and you can cut the whole stem and have a beautiful floral display. And it's something like I say that can take that full sun, doesn't mind the heat, doesn't mind bad soil. And those are the kinds of things I like to focus on because so many folks are looking for those types of plants. And some of the folks that are like just starting a yard, they may not have the experience with all kinds of different plants. And so they want something that's tough and hardy that they can learn from. And then later on, as things progress, they can start getting into those plant materials that are, well, maybe not as tough, maybe not as hardy, maybe need a little bit more care. And it's a learning process. So, you know, I learn stuff every day, and I've been learning this stuff for, you know, 50 years or more, for crying out loud.
That's what makes life interesting.
I know. And as our climate gets a little drier, it seems, we have to become more water conscious and be aware of what we can do and what we can't do.
Oh, absolutely. We don't want to be in that mess with Colorado River or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Lake Mead?
Yes.
Lake Mead down in Vegas, that's their main water supply.
Yeah, and they're
I saw a photo, aerial photo of Lake Mead the other day, and it was like half the size as normally.
Horrible.
And I've been there. I've driven over it and around it and mm-hmm. seen it, and it's, you know, when it's full, it's quite a lake.
Starting to ration the water.
Yeah. And, you know, with all those casinos and stuff, with all the hotels.
Not good.
Ration the water, eh? Okay.
And dead bodies coming up now off the ground out there in Lake Mead.
You're kidding. Really? I wouldn't doubt it. You know?
No, there have been. There have been several found.
Oh, my gosh.
One guy they thought was from the 70s because of his clothing that was still preserved.
And the body was there?
I don't know if the body was, but the shoes.
The
and,
skeleton was there?
Yeah. Apparently the boots or whatever he was wearing.
This is a plant show, okay?
Oh, not a homicide show.
That's not a homicide or us.
Okay, we're out in the weeds again.
Yeah. Okay, so we're getting tight on water. So what do
yes,
we do?
Yes, we are.
That means selecting plants that are not water lovers. Okay, unless you have a swamp on your property, and some people do. Some people have a pond. Some people have a stream, and they're, you know, fortunate to have that. But we want to We want to select, when we're selecting plants, we want to get those that are not water lovers. I'm doing a job out in 10 Mile right now, and it's fairly dry, and they have a well, and it's a fairly good well, but we're not putting as many plants in as normal, you might say. We're spacing them out a little bit farther, and there's no sprinkler system in the area that we're planting, and it's really a relatively small area, maybe 1,000 square feet where the plant materials will go. And in fact, they're meeting me at the nursery tomorrow morning, and I'm going to give them the quick tour and show them the best, hardiest, most colorful hopefully deer resistant, because they sometimes have a deer in their yard.
Can you imagine?
out in 10 Mile?
Oh, no, never. Unheard of.
Yeah, I'm totally unheard of. Oh, gosh. But when you go plant shopping, you know, you need to do your homework before you go. Get a book on plants. Get a garden book of some sort. And if you don't have one, the box stores have them, or the co-op has them. And they'll say, there'll be one on indoor plants. There'll be one on trees. There will be one on shrubs. And they'll go through these are the toughest. These are the middle. And these are the ones that take a little bit more care and better soil, blah, blah, blah. And just reading that material and seeing photos, you'll get to familiarize yourself with, hey, this will probably work in our yard, and I like the looks of it. Yeah. And then go shopping. And when you do go shopping, make sure you go shopping to a place where they actually grow plants and know how to raise them, or they landscape or something like that. Because sometimes I've gone to the big box stores, and you ask a few questions, and the person that's waiting on you doesn't know. And, you know, and this is a new plant to me. I want to make sure that it does a certain thing or grows a certain way. And so instead, I still buy it, but I look it up in my books and say, oh, yeah, okay, that's going to work. That's going to fit.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't get plants that, on purpose, that don't work in our area, but you need to familiarize yourself with, hey, what's going to work in your yard? What's going to work here in Roseburg, Oregon? And you don't want to be wasting money buying plants every 3 months and sticking them in and saying, why did I do that?
As I have come to learn from you, there are a lot of plants that will grow in Douglas County.
Oh, yeah, literally thousands, yes. Literally thousands.
I was amazed.
Oh, yeah. But the water situation that we have is, you know, it's something that we have to be aware of. So we don't want to waste the water. We don't want to let it run until it runs down the driveway or something like that. And the nursery industry is highly, highly aware of this transition and are growing and selling many more drought-tolerant shrubs and trees. And, you know, that's like step one. And step two is, on the consumer and designer of landscapes, they have to know what they're getting. They have to know that particular plant will survive with little or no water from time to time. So when a homeowner buys plants from a nursery or has a professional designer and landscaper installing your landscaping, don't hesitate to ask questions about, hey, what? How hardy is that plant? And how much do I water it? And I give all that information anyway.
Get the old nitty gritty on it.
Do we have a call?
No, we have a break coming up.
Oh, a break. Okay, let's take a break.
Okay. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Phone lines are still open.
673-4464.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Local talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, as we come blasting back.
Yeah, and there's a fly in here that's chasing us around the room.
Yeah, it wants to be smacked, I think.
I think so, but we don't have any newspaper here to smack it with. Anyway, I'm talking about hardy plants and water and heat and those kinds of things. And, you know, and when I ended there, I was saying that when you are shopping for plants, ask questions about the care. You know, how do I water it? How do I fertilize it? Will it grow in sun? Does it grow in shade? Well, what kind of soil type? You know, that kind of thing. Those are all very critical, important questions so that you, when you plant it, let's say you spend $20 for a plant and you don't know those things and you just dig a hole, stick it in and water it till it floats back out of the ground, you just lost $20. Why?
Oh, yeah.
There's no point in that.
No.
So my insurance plan when I landscape for my clients is that in each planting hole, we overdig the hole. In other words, it's deeper and wider than the plant container.
Ah.
And then you set the poor soil aside, and the poor soil might be clay, it might be rocks and clay, it might be just junk soil. And then we set all that aside, clean out that hole, and install our own soil mix, which consists of old bark mulch, compost, and topsoil, about a third of each of these materials, and then we mix it thoroughly, really mix it up well. Then we put, since it's an oversized hole, we've got probably 6 inches of depth that we put the good stuff in, and then you put the plant in, and then you fill the sides with your good mix. Mm. And that's like an insurance policy. If you then don't overwater and just water when it needs it, that plant's going to survive, and it's going to the root systems are going to take off very quickly into that new potting soil or that potting mix that you manufacture, or you can buy it by the bag. But I like to mix the, like I say, the old bark and topsoil and then our organic mix that we have out there. It's like a potting mix. And you mix them all together so you can't see, you know, it's all a blend at that time. And nothing's going to burn the roots. Everything's going to be fine. And it's going to grow well for you. And you're assured of good drainage, you know, when that happens. Now, our soil, excuse me.
Boy, must be the weather.
It's the fly that got in my throat.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, our soil mix will stay moist but not soaked because it's loose. You water and it drains. And the reason we dig the hole 6-8 inches deeper than the plant is that if there is excess water and it drains, it'll drain all the way to the bottom where there are no roots and you're not going to hurt it. So in time, as it gets more mature, it'll be able to handle that a little bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah. That way you're not overwatering the plant, but there's water in there. But in our soil, like I say, our soil mix will stay moist but not soaked. You can feel it and feel the moisture in it, but you don't have to squeeze a gallon of water out of it. And even in the hot weather, a deep soak once a week is all that's needed, because that mix that we planted in retains that moisture for quite some time. And that's what's, like I say, a deep soak once a week, man, that's good. Maybe twice a week if it's 105 or something like that. But always feel the soil first. If it feels damp, ignore it. If it feels bone dry 2 inches down, give it a soak.
Yeah.
That's as simple as it gets. And that's only the first year. And after the winter season, you know, the plant is fully rooted and less water is needed the second year because it's growing. You watch it. You're not even beginning to water until, say, May, you know, because the soil is damp all that time. Here this winter we had so much spring rain that the soil was damp clear into May sometimes, and depending
on June.
Yeah, in June too. And it really didn't harden up and dry out till about July, and of course now it is concrete, for crying out loud.
We finally got summer.
Yeah, we finally got summer. But by that time, that plant is fully rooted and less water is needed because it's mature, it's going. And usually after 2 years, that shrub or the tree is on their own, and occasionally maybe you want to water it, but that's occasionally. And, you know, always look at your plants. What do they look like? If they're drooping, if the leaves are drooping, it needs water. If the leaves are browning on the edges and kind of curling up, that's too much water.
Ah.
It's real simple.
Yeah.
And most people mix that up.
Drooping, not enough water.
Right. Right.
And drying up.
Drying up and crisping, and actually the leaf margin on the outside starts to curl and get brown and crisp. That's too much
water. Too much water. Yeah, right. Okay.
So, that's the lesson for today. Bye.
No, we got 2 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. So, but as you get used to your landscape, you know, if you're a serious gardener or even a half-serious gardener, you walk around the yard, you look at stuff, you see how it's growing, and you'll get the feel for how much water it needs or how much fertilizer it needs. And in time, you're going to look at your lawn in the same light, and yeah, you might have a few minor problems here and there. There might be a glitch or two, but with experience, you get better, and that's all there is to it. But I've been doing this for so long. I mean, it's like I had to mow my lawn when I was 7. Yeah, I could barely push the mower. Didn't have no motor on it. You had to push that, bubby.
And it was all uphill.
Well, both ways. No, actually, it was flat, and it wasn't that big, but my dad thought it would be good training.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it trained me never to buy a lawnmower that you had to push.
Yeah.
But many of the trees and shrubs that I planted at my home are basically on their own. And as I said, I have Japanese maples on my hill that I haven't watered in years, and they're looking great. But I look at them every day and just to see how they're doing, make sure that I'm not neglecting them in some way. And I'll see you next week. And thank you for listening.
What are we going to talk about next week? Do you know yet?
I'll probably continue on this hot and dry stuff and talk about plants that'll survive in it. And
okay, good.
You know.
And fortunately or unfortunately, still going to be warm throughout the week.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
I think I'll move.
Well, you stay cool, Mike, and we'll talk to you next time.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.